Previously on the Jay and Dan podcast.
Watched a movie with the girls there the other day. Kindergarten Cop. One of the kids in the class, the dad was going to come and kidnap him.
Couldn't they just homeschool the kid? Solve that problem right there. No need to have this awkward Austrian man come in.
Even if I spend all my and my mother's savings, I will be able to cover only part of the cost for this trip. That's all
saver.
I can say. I was ready to pack my suitcase, and now I'm crying. I think we should make an equal contribution to our meeting.
Yes, I agree.
We got our first money ask.
Perfect. Just write a check. Send it off tonight.
It'll be the end of my letter. I have to go back to home now. Getting dark. Well, it's getting
dark.
There's no need to spend all that money, as my cousin is a pilot and he can get me to Russia for $25. That's it.
When you said I can make my way over there, was she like, "This is great, you sleep at uncle's place"? What do you have for body parts? Please list your body parts alphabetically.
I've got a Hotmail.
Literally my email address.
Who's your daddy and what does he do?
Well, I think you buy a ticket. I think you go.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan podcast, presented by our good friends at Coors Light.
Loaded with the good stuff.
Dance. Dance.
We are 2 months deep into summer. June 11th. 2018.
You made me spit up.
I missed that Jonathan Torrens line saying, "Will you list your body parts?"
There was so much going on.
It was controlled chaos. We apologize for that. The last podcast, we had a lot of fun, but when you have
we had five, including us, there were five people on the mics, so it was it might have been a little confused. We might have missed a couple of great lines,
but
from Jono.
But there was an email address that was put out on that podcast, and boy.
Tim Oxford at hotmail.com turned out to be Tim Oxford, drummer of the Arkells, actual email address. And oh, did Tim receive some emails last week?
Yeah, they were all from Ukrainian women looking for a man.
That's right. Which probably when he signed up for Hotmail, that was his dream back then.
Yeah.
You know, if I could only get some Ukrainian women to email me on this Hotmail.
And
I'd
then,
be happy
and then a lot of actual listeners emailed him and said, "Hey, I had to."
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, well, we appreciate that. Yeah. I don't think Tim minded that much. It'll probably die down. I'm not the Ukrainian women. That'll never stop. That'll drive him insane until he's forced to adopt a new email address.
Speaking of
TOxford at hotmail.com.
Speaking of which, it's almost like paperwork now with Olga. I had to print stuff off, but luckily there are a lot of quick exchanges this time.
Okay, let's get into it now.
Oh, now?
Yeah, because I think we should get into it now because we got a couple of guests on the show today and we got to get to them pretty
quick.
Can
I just bring up something though? I went to a Blue Jay game Saturday.
Why don't you do that after? Let's do Olga now.
You really want to get this out?
Yes. No, not out of the way. I want to make sure
we get
it
in. Okay, so this is the last one we sent. Can't make it next week. What's another good time? Whatever.
Right.
She said, "My love, Dan, do you really want to come visit me? It sounds great. My vacation's already very soon, and it's good time to meet in person. I'm very happy about your message. Tell me the date when you plan to arrive." If you're just tuning in, this is a female in Russia that I've been emailing for about a month, and we're trying to arrange a meetup. We're pretty sure it's a man that is emailing. Anyway, I'm continuing with the charade. I'll introduce you to my friends and my family. Of course, you can stay in my house if you want. I'll show you many interesting places. It'll be an amazing time for the two of us. How long can you stay in Russia? And then she said, "I'll be waiting for your letter. My love, Dan, I miss you. What are you..." Oh, crap. See, this is where it gets so freaking confusing. So I said, "Olga, it's sad that you've put a time limit on our relationship. This saddens me. As I previously told you, next week is not good for me as I will be in New York City to crown the championship golfer at the U.S. Open. I dare not miss this event as it is critical I am there. As you see by the picture, I have sent the money you requested. It should be there any day now." And I sent her this picture. It's a envelope that says, "Olga, then Orenburg, Russia." And
you drew a fake stamp on it. No postal or zip code. No actual address. We should definitely... I don't know if you posted that, but you should post that on the Jay and Dan.
Okay.
Maybe the Instagram stories.
So she responds. So she gets that. I thought, okay, she'll easily...
Right.
Yeah, this is
it.
She said, "Are you laughing at me? What nonsense did you write to me? Do you think I'm stupid?
Oh, no.
Do you think that if you sign the envelope, I will believe that you sent money? Dan, my dear, I too am sad and not comfortable because of the situation that I have to spend so much time discussing our meeting. We could discuss more interesting things. Well, it seems I'll have to return to this again. It's hard to for me to be alone without a man. I'm still a young girl and I lack tenderness and affection. But I think it's better that I'll be alone than with anyone. I need only one man who will love and care for me, to whom I can give all my feelings and will be true. This conversation does not make me happier every day of the day. So let's decide today, Dan. Either we meet or no. There are only two options for us. Now, do you understand why I'm trying to rush you? I'm afraid if we do not take this serious step forward, our meeting, then we'll simply not have a suitable chance to meet. I will go on vacation and most likely spend it in the countryside. Then I'll be busy with work and cannot take a vacation for a long time. What is even more offensive to me, you will find a new girl and you will tell her what I would like to hear. To whisper tender words into her ear, to hold her in your arms and receive mutual caresses.
Okay.
Okay. This cuts my heart with a knife. Why can you not decide now on a serious act? Do a man's act and tell me your firm word. Sorry, I do not want to hear from you anymore. Or, yes, my dear, pack up your bags.
My wife.
The decision is up to you. I did everything in my power. I no longer have arguments, no matter how I could influence your decision. Still your girl, Olga. So I said, Olga, the real question is, are you laughing at me? Do you think I'm stupid? You think I'd just send money to someone I've never spoken to? Good morning, my Dan. I understand you, but you also understand me. I took a vacation just for you for the sake of our meeting. I do not want to spend my holidays alone. I want to hear from you. But I did everything that was in my power. I cannot take care of my arrival alone. Oh my God, this goes on forever. I said, Olga, I found a solution. Since I get a ticket to Russia for cheaper, you send me $800, and then I book the flight and be there next week for your vacation. When can I expect the money? I need to book the flight quickly.
Yeah, that seems logical.
Olga, do you read my letters? I explained to you that I cannot buy tickets separately from my visa. The travel agency is not going to make me a visa separately. They say they can deal with my documents only if I order a full range of services, including an air ticket. Olga, you don't need to buy a ticket. You just need to send me money.
Mm-hmm.
Those dollar bills, y'all.
That's right.
I will buy a ticket to Russia, but need money from you first. And then she goes back this one. Oh, my God. And it's stressful, these conversations.
Well, you're doing it to yourself.
My love, Dan, I miss you. What are you talking about? I already explained to you that I cannot buy tickets separately from my visa. Okay, we got it. Okay. You don't need to buy a ticket. I'm flying to you. I have to explain this every time. Much cheaper than your ticket. And then she said, are you stupid?
Ooh.
You told me you can come to me for $25. And now you write to me that you need $400.
Yeah, see?
Do you have a visa? You cannot come to Russia without a visa. And what kind of nonsense do you write to me? I already explained to you that I cannot buy tickets separately from my visa. Do you understand me? So I said, are you stupid?
Oh, boy.
Yes,
the podcast is sponsored by our friends at Coors Light, by the way.
I said, yes, I have a visa. With taxes, my ticket's $800. You don't need a visa to send me money. If you don't send me money, I will know that this was a big scam and that you never once loved me at all.
Ooh, the L word.
So she sends back, send me a scan of your Russian visa.
Whoa.
So I said, do you think I'm so stupid to send such an important document to someone over email? And then she responds, because you do not have it. You'll always come up with excuses.
She's right.
So I said, says the only person on earth who doesn't have a phone number.
Boom, Toolsy. Point to Toolsy.
And then I said, how many people on earth actually fall for your scam?
And is that where we left it?
No, then she sent me this one. And that's so long. Now she's back to being loving. She
okay,
says,
hold on. Before you get to that, we're going to have a guest coming up in 3 minutes.
Okay, I can.
So let's.
Okay,
we'll put that on pause.
Yeah. Well, just wait. I'll give you the.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to say we could save it till the end of the podcast. We could come back to it.
Okay, so we'll come back.
Let's come back to that. So you really laid the hammer down at the end there. And now she's coming back. So that's our little cliffhanger. You got to keep listening at the
end.
And
then we'll craft a response to this one.
Perfect. I love it.
Because I can't do this. This is like, I've got files now. Olga's filling files.
I can attest to this. If you're listening, which people normally do on a podcast, they just listen. Dan's got pages and pages of printed out emails right in front of him. And I can see the stress. You can hear the stress in his voice. Now, this has gone from a fun little podcast gag to something that is prematurely aging Dan more than life itself has already prematurely aged him. So,
But everyone wants to know. Every person I run into, they're like, what's going on with Olga?
Yeah, well, this was an exciting story. We were hoping for love for you. We were hoping love was going to find you from across the pond, just as the World Cup began in Russia.
I should ask her about the World Cup.
Yeah, you should. Ask her if she wants to go with you. We could get tickets. We're the official broadcaster.
Hey, we know people over there.
Exactly.
They can go to Hornburg.
Yes. Lots of Fox people. Less TSN people. Don't have quite the same cash. And there's people over there now that we could send.
Okay, so I think part of our response will be, okay, I've got the money.
Yeah.
I know people over there. Give me your address. They'll come drop it off to you.
Boom.
And Rob Stone, who's been on this podcast, he's the host of Fox Soccer.
You know what we'll do? We'll get him on the podcast, and we'll, after he goes to drop it off in Orenburg.
But he might die.
Well, he doesn't have anything to do. He's just the official host of Fox's World Cup coverage all over the United States from Moscow. So I'm sure he's got the time to just hop on a quick first-class train to Orenburg from Moscow. So we'll arrange
that. Or we can send Orono native Rachel Bonetta.
Oh, Jenny Taft. She could go. Who else? Who hosted the Bundesliga? Brit.
So they're staying in Moscow?
Yes.
Okay. Should we dial up? I guess I'm going to look the distance.
Yeah, well, before we do it, actually, before we dial them up, just a quick backstory. No, go ahead. Actually, Stoff, go ahead, dial them up. David McMillan is our first guest, and then our second guest is Jamie Noodles McLennan. David's coming on. He's the owner of Joe Beef and in Montreal. Amazing restaurant.
Just wait. It's 1,400 kilometers from Orenburg to Moscow.
Perfect. That's just a 14-hour train trip. No problem. No problem.
Okay, sorry.
So you may know Anthony Bourdain, chef, author, passed away, took his own life last Friday in France while he was shooting an episode of his CNN show, Parts Unknown. This has affected more people deeply than I ever realized that it could.
I was going to say the same thing.
It's incredible how this has affected people. He represented something to everybody. I think you and I talked about it. You and I saw him as a guy. I'm sure everyone else saw him as this cool chef restaurateur. You and I just saw him as a guy who pretty much had the dream job that we would want to have, or anyone in broadcasting would want to have. Traveling the world, meeting interesting people, eating amazing food, and just generally being the coolest mother on the planet. Period. And this has affected a ton of people. It's been, I don't know, it's been interesting.
Yeah, it has. I just was listening to Stern on the way in, and Alec Baldwin said how it affected him. He couldn't get over it, and he was still dealing with it.
I think the thing that's, you know, you knew Bourdain's background, which was he was a drug addict, he struggled with anxiety, with depression. But I think the thing that this really tells you is that you don't know, you know, you think someone's over that. You think someone's moved on to a different stage of their life, but nobody is ever really over it. That's all I can say about it. You know, I mean, you looked at the guy, it seemed like he had it all. He had a movie star girlfriend, he had a daughter, he had, like you and I said, the best job on the planet, mm-hmm. and still, it, you know, it wasn't enough to overcome what he was dealing with. Now David McMillan is the co-owner of Joe Beef, Le Vin Papillon, Liverpool House, and Mon Lapin. I hope I'm pronouncing all those correctly. And David is an amazing chef and restaurateur from Montreal, and Anthony Bourdain became pretty close with him as he continued to travel back to Montreal, a city that he described as one of his favorites on the planet, which is amazing when you consider Anthony Bourdain literally traveled the entire world. He loved Montreal, loved the food scene there, and loved David and his partner Fred Morin. And recently, on an episode of Parts Unknown, one of the last episodes that ever aired, David and Fred and Anthony went to Newfoundland, and Fred and David toured him around and kind of showed him the interesting culinary scene there. So, David, I believe you're on the line now. First of all, thanks for joining us. Great to have you on. I know you're super busy. Tell us when you first met Anthony, David, and was it an instant bromance right away? Did you guys get along right away?
How are you? I'm good. We met a long time ago. I think our careers have been intertwined since as much his beginnings as perhaps ours. We met him, I think, when he was hawking the first book on the road, Kitchen Confidential. We had a little dinner for him at Liverpool House. He wanted to meet the local chefs. At that time, the book wasn't really quite mainstream, right? It was really kind of a cult book that was being passed around kitchens. The industry was reading the book. But Tony was still very much like, a guy on a budget staying in cheap hotels doing book tour.
How did the industry react to that book? Because it was a real sensation, right? He was exposing a lot of the secrets of the restaurant industry in a way.
Correct. Absolutely. People didn't know that you shouldn't order fish on certain days. People didn't understand, the rousing in the kitchen, the culture, the long hours, the alcoholism, the drug addiction, the relationship between chef and food writer, the relationship between chef and customer, how bad customers can be and how good customers can be. And it was a real eye-opener, nobody had written about the inner workings of a modern New York kitchen at that time.
Let's talk about the fact that Jay discussed this right off the top, how the passing of Bourdain, we have never seen the outpouring of emotion online, on TV. I can't remember another celebrity or another person that passed in which so many quotes, so many photos were sent out by these people because they're trying to come to terms with it. Why did he, or how did he have that effect on people?
Tony was a pretty public person. He had the stardom of a Brad Pitt, let's say, the same more, plus he was engaged in social media. He was engaged in all kinds of different causes, but as well walked the streets like you walk the streets, like I walk the streets, ate in restaurants like anybody else, and never said no to anybody who asked for an autograph or a picture. And it was his goal to promote these marginal chef-owned restaurants, butcher-owned butchers, and to kind of expose the best of the industry. Not necessarily the most famous, not necessarily the richest, but the people who were passionate about doing the best work that they could. Stuff was really close to Tony's heart. We're seeing now, of course, on social media that how many people actually have an autograph, how many people have a picture with him, how many people he actually spoke to, how many conversations he's actually had. It's ridiculous. It's like there's millions of people he's touched. He was very generous to his friends. Fred's career, and we're just talking about Montreal, Martin Picard's career, we've been busy for, 12 years or 15 years due to, the work that he's done in this province with us. And there's a trickle-down effect to all of my friends and peers. Tony Bourdain coming to Montreal was beneficial to tourism in the province and Canada as a whole. We're going to see that now happen in Newfoundland. I don't even think they understand in Newfoundland what's about to happen in St. John. There was a little bit of backlash, I think, because Tony called, said Newfie, the word Newfie, and some people got upset about that, but I don't think they yet understand. The show aired 2 weeks ago. They're going to see next year an enormous spike in tourism, and then they'll remember and feel sorry for, making a kerfuffle about the word Newfie.
Now, do you have, David, a favorite? You and Fred shot so many shows with him and did so much with him. Do you have a favorite memory? Either shooting with him or maybe even just off camera. Do you have a favorite memory of Tony?
Yeah, we had a really special moment at one time. He brought us down to Miami to cook a dinner at the Wolfsonian Museum with Danielle Boulou, Eric Repair, two very famous French chefs working in New York, Andrew Carmelini, another iconic chef in New York. And he made it really easy on us. It was just like 100 people. We had to cook one course. We were very well financed. We all stayed like on his floor at the Raleigh Hotel. And we never understood why like we needed to like spend 14 days in Miami to cook one dinner for, you know, 100 people with 10 other chefs. And the whole thing was like, he said, screw it. Like, I booked this for you guys to have 2 weeks off. We literally spent 13 days in the pool at the Raleigh drinking beer and doing nothing with Tony, you know, just like sitting by the pool, lamenting over, or should we have the club sandwich or the hamburger for lunch and what cheeseburger restaurant we were going to eat at for dinner. It was an amazing, generous time, and you know, we became really close on that trip.
Do you think maybe he needed more moments like that? Because you describe his lifestyle, he was like a rock star. Do you think maybe he just wanted to go to dinner and just be another face in the crowd and not have to deal with all that?
Yeah, I felt that, you know, I think he loved the last show we did in Quebec was very good. It was very fun. We relaxed a lot, had a lot of laughs. But this last trip in Newfoundland, like, we're also close to his ex-wife, Otavia. Over the years, you know, she comes up for any UFC events, and, you know, they're big MMA fans and jiu-jitsu fans, and so are we. So we bonded about that. The last time, I think, you know, since the last show we did in Quebec and then this Newfoundland show, we hadn't seen each other for maybe like a year. And I know that during that year he divorced from Otavia, and then he was in a bit dark, and he was really starting to complain about life on the road and being away from home, you know, 260 days a year. And it was starting to take its toll, and he'd met this new woman, and he fell over, like, you know, head over heels for this girl. I just felt that when we were in Newfoundland with him, it was dark. It was just, he just seemed tired. He seemed like he was smoking way too many cigarettes, you know, for the wrong reasons. It was like nervous smoking. And I don't know. I remember talking with Fred, like, we were just saying we didn't feel that he was in a good place. That said, you know, could we have reacted? Could we have done anything? No, we're from the restaurant industry. You know, we work with a lot of people who aren't in a good place. So having people around us that are not in a good place is kind of the norm. We never thought, you know, ultimately that Tony would go that route. Because, you know, Tony wanted, you know, who didn't want to be Tony Bourdain, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to be Tony Bourdain. You know, but the thing is those episodes are fun to watch, but producing those episodes are grueling, you know, and one after the other and year after year, and being away from your family, and just when the normality becomes hotel rooms and being alone with your iPad, you know, I can see how he might have been depressed, sensitive. And of course, let's not forget that he was somewhat, you know, he struggled with addiction issues early on in his career.
Yep.
I don't feel that he was sober, you know, maybe sober from hard drugs, but he was definitely a drinker, you know. We noticed, too, that the drinking was, it started early, you know, when we shot Newfoundland, you know, we were drinking at 10 a.m., and we were still drinking at 10 p.m., and, you know, for me and Fred, that's a special thing, you know, we just... that we're doing that for the shoot. When we go back to our families and normal life in Montreal, Tony was just going on to another shoot and another lonely hotel room another hotel bar.
Yeah, you mentioned the hotel rooms, because when you're on the road, your choice is sit in your hotel room and like watch a movie or read a book. You can't go to the living room and hang out with anyone because the living room is the lobby bar.
You know, I talk to hockey players about that often. You know, we have hockey players come by the restaurant, and I've made relationships with different hockey players over the years, up to till they get traded or they retire, you know. And all the money in the world doesn't make getting on a plane every day fun. You know, like, pack your bag, put your suit on, grab your bag, go to the bus, get the bus, the airport, go play hockey, go to the gym, go to practice, go back to the hotel room, try to fit your family in. You know, like the regular season for an athlete is grueling.
Yeah.
No matter, you know, no matter the money, you know, you have to stay in a very strong mental health position. You know, it can catch up with you.
It sure can. David, I want to end on a lighter note. I love your restaurant so much. I think it's the best restaurant in the whole country. And I was lucky enough to bring Dan there one night, my wife and I, and we had such a terrific time. And I wish I could remember the gentleman who served us that night, because he took a special shine to Dan that evening. And
yeah, I remember this.
He looked, if I could describe him, David, he looked like a young Will Sasso from Mad TV. He was a big guy, shaved head.
And Patrick Oakes.
Okay, there we go. So Patrick was so kind to us. Dan asked for Bailey's at one point. He was shocked. and then Dan, at one point, couldn't find it. We loved the meal, but he couldn't find anything he liked on the menu. And I remember,
I wanted chocolate. I wanted something chocolate.
Dan craved something chocolate. There wasn't anything chocolate on the dessert menu. So Patrick went out to the dépanneur and got Dan a Mars bar. It was like something I'd never seen before in a restaurant. So Patrick,
that's Joe Beef.
That's Joe Beef. I mean, that's such a wonderful atmosphere.
And
that
he served
you guys
it
create
on a plate. That's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll say this in closing. You know, Joe Beef is a all restaurants are somewhat, you know, run by pirates. pirates have an inclusive community. Everybody's welcome on the pirate ship. What we lost in Tony Bourdain is our captain. The captain of the pirate ship is gone, you know.
Well said, my friend. It's so nice of you to take a little time. I know you're busy with all the restaurants and everything else, but hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you kindly for having me on, and be well.
Take care, David.
Thanks, David.
That's David McMillan, co-owner of Joe Beef, Le Vin Papillon, Liverpool House, and Mont Lapin.
Yeah, I'd never find Montreal. Any of these restaurants unless you'd say, hey, check out this place, check out that place. I'm like, there's an Arby's across the road.
It's my only hobby. It's all I've got. No, it's such a great restaurant. It's tiny.
Yes.
And it's interesting. The food is interesting. They had I think they had it when you and I were there, the foie gras double down. KFC had the double down sandwich at the time, which was the two chicken breasts, which were serving as the bread of a sandwich. And David and Fred decided to double down on the double down and have their buns be foie gras, which is insane.
Yeah.
Like fried foie gras.
Pretty heavy.
So, heavy dish. That was nice. That was nice talking to David.
Yeah.
Hey, so you went to a Jays game. Tell me about that. I bet you that didn't cost you anything at all.
You've already got my concession thoughts. Ridiculous.
Do we, though? Do we have your concession thoughts?
Yes.
Have we heard them lately?
No, it's just...
Let's hear...
Because, no, I wanted to do some research and see where the Jays stack up.
Oh, to other...
Yeah. So,
okay.
We arrived at the Blue Jays game at 12:30 for a 1:07 start. This is tons of time. The lineup to get into our gate, and I'm not even exaggerating, was approximately a kilometer long.
So this apparently is a problem ever since they've increased security at major league parks.
Yes.
Other parks.
I asked the security guard. I got in. He says, yep, every weekend it's like this. He goes, you come during the week? No problem. So I walked past and I said, my mom went with me, my daughters. I said, if something was happening on schedule every single weekend that you had a game, would you not assign someone, say, fix this?
Yeah. I remember people tweeting about this when the Jays were in the playoffs a few years ago, that the game had started and we're still in line waiting to get in because security's so slow. So, yeah, you would think after that debacle that they would figure it out and then get it going. Like, we've been to games in the States together, and it's always just take out your wallet, take out your anything metal in your pocket. You know, it's like going through any checkpoint and then walk through the scanner and pick up your stuff and go in. Like, it's not rocket science. But for some reason, at SkyDome, they can't figure it out. And they have 12 entrances.
And I discussed this on our conference call that we have every day with our group. I said, the money in which they would need to hire someone to fix the problem, they would make up for in all those people getting in quicker to spend more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would instantly, you would instantly make up that money, hire someone, just say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's try this. That didn't work. Okay, let's try this. Just figure something out.
So you had a hard time getting in, and then when you were in, you're spending a lot on concessions.
Yeah, again, I'm going to come back with a comparison, but love sitting watching a J game, just going with a 7 and 10-year-old. Oh, God, they want no part of that.
Why even take them? That would be my question.
Because I want them to like, they're starting to like it now, because I had the game on the other day, the next day. They sat and watched for like 45 minutes, which they never do, because okay. Now they're kind of like, okay, I'm starting to understand.
They're starting to figure it out.
Yeah.
Jamie Noodles McLennan, are you going to take your kids to Jay's games and deal with an hour-long security line?
Probably not, but my wife, Steph, will. She's really good at that, and she's a huge Jay's fan, and ironically, she's got a pee head just like my kids, so they can share the same hat. So it's great. No, and actually, she's taken our daughter Dylan already to the game. So I'm not a huge Jays fan, not a huge baseball fan, but I always find that it takes so long. Like, just not even to get in. I get that, but like the game is so slow. And you know, I went a couple of years ago, and I think the catcher's name was Navarro, and I thought he was so lazy, he couldn't even run it out. So I would get choked. I've had enough. So I have admitted this before, that I was at the game when Joey Bats did the bat flip.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
But I left immediately after, because I had been drinking, and my buddy that I was with, we wanted to get to Harbor 60 before the rush.
Yes.
So I figured that, he did the bat flip. They were in good shape. They won. So then went to Harbor 60 and continued on my night, put it that way.
That's the way to do it.
Noodles, you don't like the outdoors. Would you consider a Blue Jay game where the dome was open outdoors?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There was a mosquito that landed on my arm that one day. Now, I went another time where it was so warm, it was disgusting, and I felt like I came up with a pretty good invention, though. I don't know if you guys can run with this, but it's called the ice towel balaclava. So if you make a mask out of a towel and you soak it in water and then freeze it overnight, you could wear it.
Yeah.
And you could, each respective team could do their own team colors. So you could wear like a balaclava, and you know, the guys, instead of selling peanuts, they could sell ice cold balaclavas to put over your face when it's so hot out. And I was hungover one day and went to a game with a buddy, and it was so hot. I was so frustrated, and I got bitten by a mosquito as well. So that was my second bad experience with the Jays and the dome open. It was awful.
I think you have this a good balaclava idea.
Or just ice cold towels, hip.
Yeah, get your towels.
Exactly.
Jay's towels.
Get a towel around your neck, but I went a step further and made a mask out of it, and just the eye holes.
So you could be outstanding. You could be cool and terrifying at the same time. I love it, Jamie. I love it.
So Noodles, your take on Ovi right now. Everyone is loving this except for Damian Cox.
Well, listen, I'm not going to go after somebody at the other company, but I do think it's ridiculous that people are criticizing him. If I won a Stanley Cup, I may be still floating in a river in Thailand somewhere. Who knows?
Right, yeah.
But I will, like, Ovi is on a mission, and the only thing he's proving is that the guy's got an iron liver.
Yes.
Because as much as I like to go on benders, put it this way, I would go on a Stanley Cup bender at the end of every season, and I didn't win anything. So the fact that this guy put a Stanley Cup in his back pocket to go along with every other award that he's ever won, I'm happy for it, and I can't wait. The only difference in today's world is that it's being documented, because that's 2018.
Right. Was it any different for, like, the Oilers in the 80s or the Flames in 89? Like,
absolutely. I played 3 years with Grant Fear in St. Louis, and on the planes, I used to sit at the back of the plane. Fearsy was the last row, and myself and Chris Pronger used to sit in front of him. And on long trips, we'd get some rum into him and get him telling stories about the Oilers in the 80s. And there's a reason why that Stanley Cup needs a chaperone. And it's from those guys. When Messier would take it to the Bruin Inn, it's a strip club in St. Albert, Alberta, and, you know, all hell would break loose. There's a reason why it needs a chaperone. And it's not because Ovi's taking it into a fountain. It's because guys did nasty things to it and out of it years ago. That's why. And that's why Philip Pritchard has a job right now.
So Ovi, all these guys like from the past who won it before, they're seeing his antics and saying, that's nothing.
I'm telling you, the guys from the Islanders that won it 4 years in a row in the 80s and the Oilers, they're looking at that saying, that's nothing. I do remember a story of a guy telling me that they went on a bender and he left his car at the rink from the original night of them winning the Stanley Cup. 12 days later, he went and got his car. 12 days, almost two full weeks. He was kind of. He said he woke up at one point and was in Hawaii. He had no idea how he got.
Oh man!
This is nothing compared to what these guys were doing in the '80s and nineties.
At the same time, Noodles, is Ovi going to let anyone else touch the thing?
That's an argument. I mean, you know, this guy is basically just glued it to his hip, and I know there's probably other guys going, all right, you might want to share a little bit, but we'll see how it goes tomorrow. I can't wait, for Tuesday's parade, because, you know, Ovi's going to have his speech, and it'll be in broken English, but for me, it'll be the sleeper guy, the guy who is just shattered, who gets the microphone. I want to see a Corey Crawford where, you know, the guy's yelling and swearing and just hammered out of his tree. He's basically Bernie Lomax, and they just wheel him up there. That's the guy I'm looking forward to.
My money's on Oshie, because that guy crushed those two beers at once. Yeah. That guy can drink.
Well, you know what it is those guys, there's some sneaky guys who went to college, and that's where they learned how to do that type of stuff, because you knew they weren't going to class. And I think the college guys their skills will be on display for sure in that parade. The problem is on those floats, you try and be in your best behavior or a little bit on your best behavior because maybe your family members are
for
around.
Sure,
but ultimately, if you've had a time the night before, we all know if you've drank so much the night before and then you have three or four beers the next day, it's in your system, so you're pickled again. So I can't wait to see it.
What happens when Ovi brings it to Russia, the cup?
I think Putin just steals it, and just like he did with Robert Kraft's ring that just went disappear. He only walked in, he showed it to Putin, and Putin said, "What ring?" And it disappeared, and they never saw it again.
That was incredible.
I feel like somehow there will be some sort of like fake cup that gets sent back with Ovi, and the real one just will be in Putin's office. And you know what? Putin will bring it out, because everyone knows Putin likes to play hockey. And if you ever watch the videos of Putin,
he's really
playing
good.
Hockey,
he's really
nobody,
good.
Nobody goes near him.
No.
Because if you knock that, God forbid, if a goaltender made a save on him, they may never see this guy and his family ever again. So
1,000%.
Those guys, everyone just kind of lets him do his thing, and he fumbles around on the ice and scores 10 goals, and they win. So now in Putin's pickup games, they'll be playing for the Stanley Cup.
Noodles, is that what happened to you in your career? Someone had these threats against you for making saves? Zinger!
Lack of talent. That's the only difference.
Zinger, that was.
It wasn't a threat of anything other than just I couldn't get in the way. Most nights, as Ray Ferraro would call it, I played dodgeball out there.
Wait a minute. You played? Did you play 17 seasons or 18 seasons?
I played 17 pro seasons, 13 in the NHL. If you include a year of the lockout, I was a player rep.
You had to work.
Nobody played any games, but I was in the NHL at that time. So yeah, I lost a year and a half of my career to those ridiculous lockouts, but hopefully we're not dealing with that again in 2020.
I was just going to ask you, do you think another one's coming? If you were a betting man?
I'm saying less around this time, because Bill Foley just spent $500 million on Vegas,
yep.
And I think Seattle's going to spend probably $600. So you got over $1 billion in new teams coming into the league. I think there's a lot more at stake. Plus, I think the NHL wants to branch out. They're obviously going to be starting and doing a couple games in China. It's bad for the league. Obviously, guys will be fighting about escrow, and you want to grow the game, and I think at some point you're going to have to get ahead of it. But knowing there's two leaders in Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr, they like to fight, and they like lockouts and work stoppages, so hopefully that doesn't happen.
And it would be so horrible, because right now, the NHL is like the cool league. There are so many viewing parties. Like, you see the fans in Washington watching a game on the road. You see the fans in Vegas watching a game. You see the fans in Winnipeg. You don't see that in NBA cities.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, you've got to stick with the momentum, but Gary Bettman's philosophy before was that the fans will come back. So if his I guess marching orders from the owners are to get X, Y, and Z. That's what he's going to try and implement. And I think the players would be best suited to try and get the best deal possible, not try and die on a hill. I remember, we would have meetings because I was a player rep, and they would say, one guy suggested, well, what if we do take a cap, but we try and get a higher share percentage, and people were just losing it on him. You've got to figure out, if you think that you're going to lose, you've got billionaires versus millionaires. At some point, they can outweigh you. You're giving up a lot of your career. At that point, I was giving up a year of my career for somebody who was maybe 10 years old at the time. So I think the players have to be a little bit selfish in that, right? And personally, I want them to be selfish because I don't want to sit and talk about nothing for a year overdrive.
Yep.
Jeff O'Neill will attack me and choke us all out because there's not a chance he'll be able to last.
No,
with a work stop.
There's mail in the studio for Jeff O'Neill. There's mail sitting here for him. Let him know.
Okay, yeah, I saw that, but he'll get to that probably this summer.
I had another question. You were drafted by the Islanders, so you have a special place in your heart for the Isles. And I wonder if you think now that Lou Lamoriello did what we all knew he was going to do. He dispatched of Garth Snow, and unfortunately Doug Weight had to go with him. Do you think now that John Tavares will sign with the Isles, Noodles?
I think the fact that Lou went there is probably positive for the fact that at least Tavares and his management group will know there's going to be a plan in place. Now, they've waited this long. I would argue that they'll check out free agency and see what's kicking around. His agency will know the four or five teams that John has circled, but the fact that Lou Lamoriello's there, and Lou's probably laid a couple scenarios out in front of him saying, hey, I'm going to go get a goalie, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and by the way, you're going to get paid that much. Like, I think John will at least know where Lou's at, and if he decides, I mean, it's up to him. If he decides, hey, I'm going to take a bunch of money in Montreal or in San Jose or, in Toronto to be a secondary player, even, to Austin Matthews. But he'll know where he wants to go. But there's no reason to believe that he at least won't explore, like Steven Stamkos, that the organization that brought him into the league. Because I think Tavares is a loyal guy, but he also wants to have success there. And maybe Lou is the guy to help deliver that.
Gary Bettman, say when he's done, whenever that is, like, God.
Yeah, it seems like it's got to
end. Buddy, just retire.
Yeah.
Who are your top three to replace Gary Bettman?
Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, does it have to be, like,
it can be anyone.
It could be outside the
anyone.
Box.
It could be Noodles.
No, it wouldn't be me. The league would fall apart.
Jeff O'Neill.
You know what I would do is I would get agitated. I would love to be in player safety because I would hand out suspensions left and right. I hate diving. I hate hitting from behind. I hate all the greasy stuff in the sports. So I would nominate myself for player safety for 1 year to try and clean it up. But I realistically could see a guy like Chris Pronger if he had like more of a legal background. But they're going to go and get some lawyer, some hotshot lawyer from New York or something who is all about business. But if it was a player, I could see a guy like Chris Pronger or a Nick Lidstrom, somebody who's a Hall of Famer, got a lot of clout and is still tied to the game in some facet.
How about Brian Burke?
I was going to say, there's a guy who went to Harvard Law School, of all places.
Oh, but Berkey, the problem with Berkey is he's such a hothead sometimes. Like,
yes.
Did you see him running the league and then somebody getting after him and him challenging? Remember when he challenged Kevin Lowe to a fight in a barn
because
of Dustin Penner's offer sheet? Can you imagine Berkey doing that? Like, you know, somebody calling him out and he'd be like, okay, you know what? I'll fly into wherever. I'm flying into Philly right now to kick your ass. You know, he's going after an owner or something, Jeff Molson. He doesn't like what Jeff Molson's doing, so he challenges him to a fight. Like,
that's great, and I want my commissioner to have a dipper in the lip.
Yeah, that's true. The tie, the dipper in the lip. Like, I think Berkey, I don't know what Berkey wants to do when it's all said and done. I think he's enjoying what he's doing right now for the time being, but I can see, I mean, Berkey certainly has all the experience on all different levels. He would be a good resource, but I don't know what he wants to do, you know, at the end of the day.
Noodles, I got to say, we got to get you on more often because you are fantastic. You're a friend of our television program. You're a friend of our podcast. You're an all-around good guy, and you hate the outdoors. You're good in my books.
Before we let you go, you watch every movie that goes to the theater. What is your biggest recommendation right now?
Oh, I saw this dud today. Heredity.
Well, don't tell us about the dud.
Oh, now, okay, hold on, Noodles. Now, Heredity you didn't like, and I'm hearing from other people that they love it, but you are not into it.
I wasn't that into it. I was a little bit tired, so I was not as focused. But I won't have a spoiler, but the commercials are so different than the actual movie. So I think that's what kind of rattled my cage, because I was watching it and I'm like, all right, this isn't supposed to happen. And I think maybe that's why people were loving it. It's not very predictable, and I don't mind that. I'm not suggesting it should be predictable. I'm just saying, like, it just kind of caught me off guard, and it wasn't as scary as people were making it out to be. I don't get freaked out too much, and this one didn't have any, like, scariness to me anyways. And it was a little long, too. I always look at the scheduling of a movie based on, you know, me getting into our show, and I had to go a little earlier because this one's like 2 hours and 8 minutes, so I was a bit rattled that it was a bit long. Usually, I think horror movies should be about $1.40 at the best.
Yes.
Now, but what's your recommend? So you didn't like that one. What's one where you'd say right now you got to go see it?
I saw Ocean's 8. I like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know what? It ties into the other ones, except this one's all women, and I thought Sandra Bullock was outstanding. She kind of dropped off the movie map for a while, and she's back now, and the cast was brilliant. I really enjoyed Ocean's 8. I don't have anything negative to say about that whatsoever.
I like it. Jamie McLennan, you can hear him on Overdrive on TSN Radio if you're... I guess you can listen all over the world if you hop online. I was going to say if you're in the GTA, but it's the best radio show, period, in this city. And it's even better when O-Dog just leaves, just checks out completely.
He goes baby monkey sometimes, we know that. But when he circles back in, it's the best because usually we have to bring him up to speed of what's going on. So it's we do it live in real time. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, you guys are amazing. Jamie, thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon, my
friend.
Thanks,
buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Jamie McLennan.
Noodles.
Good guy.
We explained it the first time we ever came on why his nickname was Noodles. It's because that's all he ate on the buses between games.
When he was playing for the Junior. Lethbridge Hurricanes in the WHL.
They just called them Noodles.
Noodles.
Okay, do we have time for Olga?
Oh, yeah.
So this is the last
course. This is perfect.
One.
We got 10 minutes or so here to just delve into this final letter.
This is Olga. The last email I got from her. I woke up to this on Sunday morning. I already explained to you that my phone is broken.
A Chinese phone.
You do not read my letters? I'm surprised that you still don't believe me. It's a shock to me. We have a long correspondence with you. Also exchange photos. I sent one. With me as Dogman. What else is necessary that you stop doubting me? You wrote all those beautiful words. I've written no beautiful words.
Well, it seemed like you did.
But did not even hope that I was real? It's funny. So you're ready to spend time together and whisper sweet words in my ear, but are not ready to trust me. Does she see a relationship as just people whispering in your ear all day?
And making pancakes with condensed milk.
Yes! Give me the dirty talk every time!
How are those pancakes?
Oh, you like the mushy center? You like that? I'm gonna bite into it. Yeah, that's weird.
Okay, we are in the same situation with you. I never saw you either. So she's saying we instead of I? Where's she tying Tatiana?
It's not her first language.
And what guarantees do I have? Maybe when I come to you, there will be no one there, or you will say that you are joking with me. What then should I do in such a situation? Agree, I do not have a 100% guarantee. According to your letters, I see that you are a decent person. Openly talk about your feelings. I don't do that.
You've never done that ever, with your family.
And this has trust in you. I drive bad thoughts out of my head that you could be a scoundrel. I want to trust you completely. I fell in love with you like a little girl. I like a magnet pulling you. But also, I heard on the internet a lot of stories about how girls got acquainted with foreign men who told beautiful words to girls. But in reality, everything turned out to be quite different. As if, in words, the girls had to return home disappointed in the man and in relations. And this is not the worst thing that happened with the girls. Never returned home or stayed there for many years? My friends are also skeptical about our correspondence with you and say that it's more like a fairy tale. I agree from a part of it. Our relations are developing so swiftly that my head is dizzy. My heart is open to you and I do not want to think about anything bad when I communicate with you. My friends do not know about all our correspondence, so they cannot judge from the outside. I have a wonderful intuition, and I can feel the person's relationship to me from a distance. Last paragraph. We are both at risk in this situation. I am ready to leave my family, friends, my country, and overcome a huge distance just to meet you. Do you not think that for me it's easy? I have a huge excitement inside, but I'm ready to overcome all my fears just to be with you. It was so difficult for me to find you, and I do not want to lose you. My beloved, if it was possible for me to come to you on my own, I would never ask you for help. But I'm also at a loss now because I do not have the opportunity to pay all expenses. That's why I suggested that you pay the expenses in half. It'll be a guarantee for me that you are really serious about me and your feelings are real. I'm ready to take a step forward if you help me with this.
I'm beginning to think she's real and that this is a woman you will marry.
Okay, let's craft a response to that one, because I haven't responded to that.
Okay. Dear Olga.
Just wait, hang on. I got to get into the Olga folder. There it is.
God, folder.
Okay, reply.
Okay. Dear Olga.
Dear Olga.
Go f*** yourself. Love, Dad.
No.
P.S. You never set foot in Saskatchewan.
Serious, what can I put? Dear Olga.
Dear Olga. Like sands through the hourglass, so go the days of our lives. It seems an eternity since our bodies last touched.
But they don't.
And that's because they haven't. But with your help and generosity.
Because they haven't. Yeah.
But with your help and generosity. And a small cash contribution.
Those dollar bills, y'all.
We will finally meet one day. So here's my suggestion.
It should be my final.
Here's my final suggestion. We split the difference and meet in London.
No visas needed, right?
That's right. I can't speak for the Russians, but not for you.
Dear Olga. Like sands through the hourglass, so go the days of our lives. It seems an eternity since our bodies last touched, and that's because they haven't. But with your help and generosity and a small cash contribution, we will finally meet one day. Here's my final suggestion. We split the difference and meet in London. No visas required.
My name's Dan O'Toole, and I support this ad.
Perfect. This is our last chance. For romance.
Yeah, I like that. Meet.
Want to see my slide?
Where did we do the show from in 2012? Trafalgar Square. Meet me in front of the London Gallery at Trafalgar Square.
Okay, that's fine.
I will race to you, and we will embrace.
Or should we say, or go to Moscow and meet Rob Stone and give him money. Or he has money for you.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Okay.
Or?
Scrat. Or alternate plan.
Alternate. I have friends at the World Cup. I find myself speaking like her.
Perfect.
Friends.
This is only the beginning.
The World Cup. They have money for you.
That's right.
Can you go meet them in Moscow?
It's only 14 hours away.
Okay, there we go. Two options.
Perfect. Hard to argue with that.
Okay, we did it.
Well, this has been a wonderful podcast.
So
it seems like Dan and Olga are just in the next stage of a burgeoning and long-lasting relationship filled with love, trust, and probably a little kinky sex.
Do you think if... So say...
That's why I do.
Say she's real. We meet up. We yes. fall in love.
Yes.
And then she discovers these podcasts.
We'll worry about that when the time comes. Let's give a big thank you to Jamie Noodles McLennan. Awesome guest. Great insight. Fun to talk to him. And David McMillan from Joe Beef and all those great restaurants in Montreal. Really great words about the late, great Anthony Bourdain.
How come they've never brought a restaurant to Toronto?
It's a great question. I guess we should have asked him that.
Yeah.
You know what I'll do? I'll text him right after this and I'll ask him that. And we'll have the answer next week. Maybe they don't want to... Maybe they have an unofficial... Remember Earls never came out east?
And Cactus.
Because Jack Astor's had some sort of... They had some sort of unspoken, like, agreement. Unwritten agreement. I guess it was spoken because they couldn't communicate by telepathy. That they would stay in each other's playground, right? The Earls and Cactus Clubs would be out west and the Jack Astor's... And then Astor's came to Calgary or something and the Earls people were like, "F*** you, here we come."
It was an unspoken, unwritten agreement. It was only blinking.
Restaurants. Fun okay. to talk to you guys. And thanks for listening.
We'll post the letter that yes. I sent Olga, the envelope. We'll put it on the Jay and Dan Instagram and Twitter.
Perfect.
So you can see how she did not fall for it.
Yeah, I'm surprised in many ways. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
They're going home!
This is the Jay and Dan Podcast, presented by our good friends at Coors Light.